You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at LockedOnBulls. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShibles, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. You guys have been doing a great job dropping us voicemails. We're hearing from new listeners every single day, whether it's in text messages, voicemails. So keep that coming, whether you've listened to this show for a week, year-long listener to Locked On Bulls. We want to hear from you. 331-979-1369. Welcome back, Matt. One day closer to the weekend. Almost there. And with one more day closer to the weekend, that means one more day closer to NBA training camp. We're still getting good Bulls news as well. We're going to talk about Jabari Parker's Players Tribune article to start the show off, and then also we're going to take some more voicemails and text messages to wrap up the show. But first, Matt, how you doing?
Doing all right, Jordan. What's up, Bulls Nation? Getting closer to that weekend, and I'm hyped. It's a big day for the Locked On Network. Just a quick plug real quick. If you didn't see it on my Twitter timeline, I stopped by Josh Lloyd's Locked On Fantasy Show earlier this week to give a breakdown of pretty much every player on this Bulls roster, and Josh relays that into fantasy relevance. So if you're a big NBA fantasy basketball player and a Bulls fan, go check out that episode. You can get it on Josh's Twitter page. That's at @RedRock_bball. Also on the Locked On Fantasy YouTube channel. Had a lot of fun with Josh. And then also the big news for the network today is that starting today, the Locked On Network is locked on to college. Today launches the college channel for the Locked On Podcast Network. If you are a fan of Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, Florida, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Baylor, Penn State, Oregon, or BYU, go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, your preferred podcast platform, and follow those shows for free. It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Jordan, I don't know about you, but I'm stoked because, first and foremost, I am a Northwestern football fan. Go Cats. And I'm hoping that, you know, Big Ten Locked On is just around the corner. But I'm also, by proxy, because of my brother-in-law, a pretty big Sooners fan. So I'm stoked to check out that Oklahoma Sooners Locked On show. What about you?
Yeah, I'm excited. As soon as they can get some of these other Big Ten teams, more notably IU, definitely be following that every single day. And you know what we do here. You know a lot of the Locked On shows around the country. So you know we have good content, good content creators here at the Locked On Podcast Network. So I'm excited. I think college is going to explode. And podcasting being sort of the new generation a way to listen to a radio show or a debate show, this ties in perfectly because college, between college football, college basketball, and everything in between, It's going to be really cool, and I can't wait till we see the expansion grow even bigger throughout the season and into college basketball season. So I'm excited. And shout out to Josh Lloyd, too. We got to get him back on the show. He's a great interview. He's a great guy to do podcasts with, and he's got a lot of thoughts on the Bulls. He's low-key, like, I think he's adamant about being a Chicago Bulls fan. I wouldn't really call him a closet Bulls fan, but he's got a lot of thoughts. And the last time we had him on was about a month ago. It sounded like he was in a wind tunnel the entire time, so we're going to try to get him into a full-on interview where you guys can hear him a little bit better and maybe approaching the season to have him on. But he is a fantastic interview, so if you like fantasy basketball or just the NBA in general, he does hop in to Locked On NBA as well a couple times a week, so definitely go give him a listen.
He does shamelessly poke fun at this Bulls organization, particularly the front office. We had some fun there. So if you are one of our listeners who's a staunch Garpax hater, I think you'll enjoy some of the things that Josh had to say when I joined his Locked On Fantasy show earlier this week. But he also, shout out again to all of our listeners out there in Australia. Josh, you know, he's probably one of like the figureheads of NBA basketball over there. And he explained to me, and this was kind of my educated guess, but he confirmed it. It was right around the 89-90 season that the NBA really made its way over to Australia, and it had a lot to do with Nike promotions that were running over there and finally reached that continent. So that's why there are so many Bulls fans. It is, of course, because of none other than Michael Jeffrey Jordan, which makes a lot of sense. If you are an international fan of the NBA and started paying attention to the league sometime in the mid to late 80s or the 90s, if you didn't have a team, the Bulls became your team. And Josh, he said that that's sort of how he began his life as a Bulls fan, and has since strayed away from that as become more of a guy who covers the entire league, all 30 teams across. But he said, yeah, that's the big reason why that the Bulls are still huge in Australia. So for those of you out there in Australia who listen to our show on a regular basis and became fans back in the dynasty 20 plus years ago, we appreciate you hanging in there just like we are.
Today's show, we want to talk first and foremost about Jabari Parker's Players Tribune article, because this had Matt early in the morning had me in my feelings a little bit, because I was getting goosebumps as I was reading it. It was a fantastic read. And whether or not you feel like Jabari Parker's a good fit for the Chicago Bulls basketball team, you can't deny, if you're from this city, if you grow up, if you're willing to root for guys in your hometown, you can't help but love what he wrote for the Players Tribune this morning. And it was more so just an idea of what Chicago really means to him and what the city really means to him. And it was just a really great read. It was short, but it was sweet, and it was to the point. And it made me want to root for Jabari Parker even more so than I have since he signed.
Yeah, that's exactly the same visceral reaction that I had when I read it the first thing this morning. And I tweeted out the link to the Players Trib column with my comments, which were basically, and it's something that I've said before on the show when I've been going nuts, pulling my hair out as far as does this make sense from a basketball standpoint, and why I've been against the Jabari signing since in the first place. I can still think that signing Jabari is not a great move for this Bulls organization and the team moving forward and the rebuild moving forward, but that doesn't mean I'm not rooting for this kid to have a strong comeback and for his strong comeback to be in his hometown of Chicago. I just didn't think that that was a good reason for signing him. And there's a difference there. But you read this and you read about his background and his upbringing in Chicago, all the people that he thanks and mentions, from coaches to neighbors to parents to older siblings, and the way that he just talks about the city of Chicago is just so, I mean, like you said, it just hits you in the feels, because if you are someone who is a native of this city and has spent most of your life living in the city, or maybe you're a native of this city and you live elsewhere right now, as I did, I lived out on the West Coast, I lived on the East Coast, and Chicago always just pulled me home. Like, I always missed this city when I wasn't living here. And Jabari, I think, just, you know, he describes it in a way that is just, it hits home, and it makes you want to root for him. So, and I said this morning in my tweet, like, if I'm wrong about Jabari being a bad idea, and he proves me wrong, he proves all the doubters wrong, and has himself a great season, and is a part of the reason that this Bulls rebuild takes a big jump in year two, I will be completely happy to be proved wrong.
It's never anything personal here, too. That's the thing that I think we try to get across to our listeners when we're talking about specifically what's great and what's good for the basketball team. And so that's why I can kind of understand from your standpoint. And like, even before the Bulls signed Parker, I was against it. I just didn't think it was a good fit. But now hearing what Chicago means to him and the stories and just the way that this was written on top of everything else that we've heard. And, you know, Jabari has already in the first, what, month, 6 weeks he's been in this city, has jumped in and done a ton for the community, has already been doing events, been at different places, running camps. So it's really cool to see. And I think on top of everything that he might do for this basketball team this year and in beyond, the community is going to benefit a whole hell of a lot from him being here. And, you know, we said the same thing about Dwayne Wade, but Dwayne Wade was more of like a pit stop than anything else. And I think Jabari really wants to prove not only as a basketball player, but as a human being and as a Chicagoan that he belongs here and he wants to make an impact. And he listed off a bunch of different people that are famous from Chicago, everybody from Common to Chance the Rapper to Kanye West to the former basketball players that played in this city and stopped here and made the Bulls what they are. I think to me, it just kind of made me as a basketball fan, as a Chicagoan too, kind of melted my heart. So I'm excited, man. I think his want to be great here is fantastic. And, you know, some of the comments that maybe were taken out of context early on when he was, you know, introduced and he had all these radio interviews and we were killing him about not wanting to play defense and all of that other stuff. This is a side that I think is more genuine than anything else from Jabari Parker. And this is really what not only Chicago Bulls fans need to hear, but the rest of the NBA and the rest of the nation. So I hope a lot of people read this and understand where Parker's coming from and some of the negative stuff that ended in his Bucks tenure there. Hopefully this is a start to a new chapter in Jabari Parker's life and in his basketball career.
Yeah, and just for those of you out there who might not have a Tribune subscription or have access to the Players Trib, I just want to read to you the last couple of lines from Jabari's Players Trib column here, because this is kind of what I was talking about, and it's hard to explain just how it makes you feel as a Chicagoan, but you can probably get a feel for what I mean, evoking such emotion, when I just read this to you real quick. Talking about Chicago, quote, "It's not about any one place or thing or person. It's everything together, you know? Like the way a dream feels real, but hard to really explain at the same time. It's the entire culture and community. It's the people living here right now and the people who lived here in the past. I guess that's the thing. My Chicago might not be the same as your Chicago. Or maybe you don't know Chicago at all. But we all know home. And Chicago is home. We might all come from different places, but home means something. Something powerful to each of us. We carry home with us all the good and the bad and the in-between. I'm back home, Chicago, but I never really left. I'm just excited to be with y'all again. There's so much that I still want to do, so much that I want to give to the city that's given me so much over the years. I'm lucky to have the support and the platform I have, and I plan on making the most of it. And if the going gets hard at times, which it always does in life, I'll know where to lean. Because I know where I'm from," end quote, Jabari Parker. I love that. I absolutely love that. For a guy who doubts his signing in the first place, I got to the end of that and I had goosebumps, and I was just, it's impossible not to be rooting for this kid.
It's great. It's honestly great. And I don't think there's anything else, any other way to describe that other than if you're from this city or if you've rooted for this team for a long time or if you've lived here at one point, you understand kind of what he's talking about. So we'll link this article if you haven't read it yet. We'll link it on our Twitter page. We'll post it on Facebook as well. You can also just hit a Google search real quick. Hit the Players Tribune, Jabari Parker. It'll be the first article available on Google. So 100%. Definitely need you guys to read this because it's important. And for all those people out there that doubt him, you know, it's a great read, and it's kind of just a small little look into his life and how he feels coming back here to Chicago. You know, there's been a million people that talked about the comparisons of Chicago athletes coming back home and playing, and we've certainly done enough of that on this show over the last 2 months, but it's really kind of like a little bit of a peek at what he feels like it is to come back here and play in Chicago. And it runs through when he was a young kid, all the way through his high school days to Duke, then being drafted and now at this point in his life. And he's talking about turning over a new chapter and being able to start fresh here. And I think that I take, and that to me, and it seems like that to Parker too, is personal. And it seems like he's going to be motivated more so than ever. And I think that's the biggest takeaway from this article is this article to me tells me he's got extra motivation to be great in this city. And that's only a positive for being a Bulls fan.
Actually, I'll disagree with you. That's the second biggest takeaway from this article. The biggest takeaway is that Jabari gave a shout out to those old Scottie Pippen up-tempos. Those Air More up-tempos, you know, the Nikes that the Pippen wore that had the word yeah. Air and white trim along the black sneakers. I loved those Scotty kicks so damn much when I was a kid, watching those Bulls dynasties just mop the floor with people. I had a poster of Scotty wearing those Air More up-tempos on my bedroom wall as a kid. And it was just such an awesome little detail that Jabari threw in there as, like, looking back and remembering, you know, me and my friends, we couldn't afford any of these shoes, but we would still just go and look at them. All these shoes that we all wanted to collect at some point. And the fact that he cited those specific up-tempos that Scotty rocked, I was like, dude, those were my favorite kicks back in the day. I've never been big on basketball shoes like some basketball fans are. Like, they're not a part of my wardrobe, but I loved those sneaks. And to me, like, they're synonymous with the Bulls dynasty. When you think about Bulls dynasty and gear, one of the first things I've always thought of are those specific kicks from Scotty. So I love that Jabari threw that in there.
We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're taking more voicemails, we're taking text messages, and we're taking your tweets. 331-979-1369 or at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Stay right here with us. Be back in 60 seconds.
Welcome back into Locked On Bulls. Matt Peck and Jordan Malley hanging out with you on Thursday. Just touched on the Jabari Parker Players Trip column that came out this morning. Definitely take a look at that. We'll post it later today. And we are going to jump in and get some more action on mailbag. We did a full mailbag episode yesterday, and we've gotten a lot of follow-up mailbags that are pretty interesting. This is great too, Jordan. The way that some people are now starting to add to text and voicemails in our mailbag section, reacting to other people who are leaving texts and voicemails. And that's great. We want you guys to not only be interacting with us, but interacting with your fellow Bulls fans. And that's why we do that. So we've got a couple of follow-ups, people either taking issue with or supporting some of the mailbags that we did yesterday, which is really awesome. Before we get to those, just a quick shout out to King's Dining and Entertainment, 1500 North Clybourne in Lincoln Park, the heart of Chicago. Our Bobby Portis bowling event headquarters, it should be your football headquarters all season long. They have a 222-foot bar, the longest bar in the city of Chicago, a full-service restaurant, over 50 HD TVs, not to mention their 16 pristine 10-pin bowling lanes, 4 billiards tables, air hockey, darts, and so much more. Shout out to Kings, a great place to go hang out, watch some sports, bowl some games, have some food and drink. With that, let us jump back into some more mailbag material. The first one is a text that comes to us from Rich in Texas. Rich says, fairly new to the pod, I enjoy the content and the show as much as any longtime listener. Appreciate that, Rich. He says, I've been watching tape of Jabari, and for people who think he plays an isolation game and that he will take shots from Lowry are wrong. Most of Jabari's shots come in transition, catch and shoot, or off of baseline cuts, will be fine there offensively. My question is, question is an unpopular one. I believe it's LaVine or Dunn this year that determines how good we are and not Lowry. In today's game, the big man doesn't win you games or rings. Your success is predicated on your guard and wing play. The last team to win with a big as the focal point of the offense was when? Just my take. Thanks for checking in, Rich. Jordan, you want to touch on that first?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is the focal point. I mean, I guess this is a toss-up too, but the focal point of the San Antonio Spurs championship was probably split 50-50, Tim Duncan and Kawhi Leonard. Am I wrong about saying that?
Yeah, and their most recent title in 2014, Tim Duncan was getting old, still very effective player, but was getting older, and they were asking Kawhi to do more. That's for
and
sure.
I get the Mavericks win too was a little bit of an outlier. That team was an outlier, but Dirk Nowitzki was.
And let's be real, the Heat choked that series away.
Exactly. So Dirk Nowitzki was the centerpiece of that, and he was a big man. So there, it does happen, but I understand what the texter is saying here, that it's not common for an NBA team to be able to dominate and win a championship with big men. But that doesn't mean that necessarily can't happen.
I mean, the 2000 to 2002 Lakers three-peat with Shaq is probably the most recent example of a legit big being the MVP, finals MVP of a team that was really good for a series of years to get collectively.
I understand it from that standpoint, and that's kind of like our argument as far as Golden State goes and kind of how the NBA is transformed. And this texter's spot on. Like, I get that. The concern is building your team around big men and whether or not that can actually win you a championship. And I think it more so goes to your guard play and who you have surrounding them. So my question would be, okay, if you don't think Lowry is going to be the centerpiece or can't get you to that next level and that championship level status, do you believe LaVine or Parker or Dunn or Wendell Carter Jr., can any of those guys can do that here? And this is also to say that this rebuild isn't done yet. So we don't know what's going to happen with this team a year from now, 2 years from now. This could all be setting up to make a trade, to make an off-season signing. So to be concerned with who you're building around as far as right now, things can change relatively quickly. But I believe that Lauri Markkanen's game translates to what the NBA is going to right now. And, you know, we talk about positionalist basketball, and that's kind of what this is now. You're seeing guys that normally would play just the three, can now play the 3-4 or the 5 in small ball lineups. Like, guys are so interchangeable around that it's almost like you can kind of get rid of the positions and really just call them a guard, a forward, or a center. And so to me, I don't know. You're right about not being able to find clear, concise cases where big men are the focal point of a team and they've won multiple championships and have multiple success. But there are a couple examples there. And I would tell you, I don't think that this rebuild is done. But to get back to the main overall question about Parker, and that's a good point to bring up, is that his catch and shoot game is really great. I think the more concerned I am is the way LaVine's going to play in isolation and whether or not that's going to work and how LaVine can be a guy that can be a catch and shoot player. And I think all of these guys are going to have to make small sacrifices to their game to ultimately make this work. What do you think about Parker's usage, his ability not only to play in isolation, but also to play in catch and shoot, to knock down the three? Tell me what you think as far as going forward, what this might look like next year, Matt.
To address Rich's point about how frequently Jabari goes ISO versus the other ways he can be effective offensively, I'm ripping this. Not ripping, because I'm obviously going to give him credit, but our friend of the pod, Stefan Ngo from The Athletic, had a really good column on Jabari earlier this week and about how maybe a start in Chicago is what he needs, and he put out a great pie chart as part of his breakdown of Jabari's offensive game, and I'm just going to rattle those numbers off for you. As far as the Jabari Parker by frequency of play type, 23.8% spot ups, 18.6% transition offense, pick and roll as the ball handler, 13.9%, making cuts, 10.7%, isolation, only 9.4%, and then offensive rebounds and putbacks, 5.7%, pick and roll man at 5%, and then handoff screens miscellaneous down in the less than 5% percentile. So that his 9.4 on ISO, lower than Zach LaVine's 11.3, lower than Jimmy Butler's 13.8 in his final Bulls season, lower than Dwayne Wade's 12% in his one and done Bulls season. So those of us expressing concern with Jabari's fit offensively is not necessarily about him being an ISO player, because Rich is not. He is not primarily an ISO player. And I have hope that he becomes a more reliable and more deadly three-point shooter than he was allowed to be in Milwaukee when Jason Kidd just said, you're not allowed to shoot threes. Because if Jabari can prove himself to be at least high 30s three-point shooter and defenses have to respect that, then you're going to start to see all those other elements of Jabari's offense come into play, where he's making cuts, he's making, doing dribble handoff stuff, and he's playing both roles in the pick and roll, and he's doing spot ups, he's doing all this other stuff. He needs to prove himself behind the three-point line for all those other things to come into effect. But Rich is not incorrect when he's saying it's not like Jabari is going to be an ISO guy stuck next to Zach LaVine, another ISO guy. If you're worried about one of those two doing too much ISO, it should be Zach LaVine.
I don't think I'm really worried about that, too. Just think about the factors that are going to play into this season, too. A lot of these guys have something to prove, and I understand that. Zach LaVine's already tied up for 4 years, though. So Jabari Parker, I think, is going to have to find other ways beyond scoring to kind of market himself to the Bulls and say, hey, you know what? This is working. I can gel with this team. I don't think I'm really that concerned. And, you know, the people that are concerned that maybe he's going to take shots and touches away from Lauri Markkanen, like I said before, Lauri Markkanen's gone on record and said he's not worried about that. So until he's worried about that.
Well, I mean, come on. No, Jordan, just because Lauri is saying to the media that he's not worried about that doesn't dismiss it as an issue.
True, but I'm not going to make it into something that it isn't right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, we haven't seen proof. We haven't seen evidence on court that this is what's going to happen. So I'm willing to wait until that day comes, and then we can hammer that home.
I'm just saying, you saw last season when LaVine came back in back half of January, all of February, and the first half of March when LaVine was in there. Markkanen's field goal attempts went down. 12.9, down to 12.5, down to 12 flat. It's not a huge drop, but it's a drop. And now you're talking about having a healthy Zach LaVine and also Jabari Parker, whose usage percentage in his, you know, his most recent successful healthy season of 16-17 when he played 50 games and averaged 20 points per game. Hold on, let me look this up real quick. His usage percentage in that season, 26.5%. Zach LaVine's usage percentage when playing last season was higher than Lauri Markkanen's. So just because Jabari isn't a primarily ISO offensive player doesn't mean you have to be concerned about him taking shots away from Lauri. Just because he's going to be on the court with him. LaVine and Jabari will both have an impact on the number of field goal attempts that Markkanen averages this season. Whether or not Jabari is an ISO player, that is a fact.
How are they going to play on the defensive side of the ball? I've never been worried about...
Poorly.
Yeah, I've never been worried about Parker's offense. I've never been worried about Zach LaVine either. Never been worried.
You're not worried about Zach LaVine's offense?
No, I'm not worried about that. I still think he's going to be an athletic scorer. It's all going to come together. Dude, we've only seen 25 games from coming back from an ACL injury on a minutes restriction on a really terrible Bulls team. So I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, but before that, we saw him play on a Timberwolves team, and offensively, he was not very
efficient.
So go
back to what I was saying about defense. That's the main concern here for me, and I think for a lot of Bulls fans. Like, you look at his defensive rating in three seasons with the Bucks, and even if you want to take the last two seasons, 111, 110, 111 defensive rating. And his defensive box plus minus was a negative 1.5, a negative 1.3, and a negative 1.6. Now, if he can figure that out, if that defensive rating can come down a little bit, same thing we were talking about with LaVine, hoping that can come down a little bit, I think they can find a way to make this work. And so, ultimately, what I would tell you is don't be worried about Parker's offense, because that's going to come. That's the reason why the Bulls signed him, because he can score. So I wouldn't be worried about that. It's looking at the defensive side of the ball and some of the tricks that they're going to have to use. And we're going to have to see Fred Hoiberg find a way to get these guys to buy in and play defense. And that's going to be a huge task in training camp in the preseason to see how these guys are going to fit and form. I think the best solution for the Bulls what they should do with their starting lineup is just go to a bunch of switching. That's what the Bulls never did last year. And they're not.
You talking about defense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is constantly switching, and that's the way the NBA has gone now. You see, watch the Warriors play. Every one of those guys can switch on to players and play, you know, even if it is average defense, they can have the ability to switch. And now with having guys with this much length, thinking about Parker, Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr. in your front court, and then you've got Dunn and LaVine with wingspans over 6'5". Like, you're talking about a lot of length that can switch off.
Just because you have length doesn't mean you're all of a sudden going to go from being a bad defensive team to a good defensive
team. That's true, but last year you were playing with a starting lineup or a lineup that was majority filled with guys like Dunn, Justin Holiday, and Denzel Valentine. That's a pretty small backcourt. So you look at that, you add some size, you add some length, you add some athleticism.
You believe in the fact that the Bulls are going to start switching more this season, which we have heard from them.
No. I said they should.
Well, no, they should. And we have heard that that is the plan. Jim Boylan, associate head coach, is going to be tasked with making this a more switching friendly defensive team. To me, that isn't a thing to look forward to. That is a headache on the way, because Zach LaVine gets lost even when he's not supposed to be switching on defense. Jabari Parker looks indifferent even when he's not supposed to be switching on defense. That communication is going to be a giant problem. So it's not like switching and being a switching defensive team, which they weren't last season, is all of a sudden going to fix the problems this season. No, I see that as an even more exaggerated problem, especially with LaVine and Parker playing next to each other at the two and the three. And that's most of my concern about smashing Jabari into the three and trying to be a defensive switching team this season. Two head cases who aren't going to be paying attention and getting cooked on a nightly basis.
So you're telling me if they would stay and defend, stay on their guy, that they'd be better off doing that? You don't think Parker's going to get burned by guys playing the three?
I'm not saying that, you know, playing strictly man and fighting through screens is better than the switching trend that we're seeing in the NBA right now. I'm saying that the Bulls, 2 and 3 of their projected starting lineup, who are guys that you are so convinced are going to be great for them offensively, are not going to be a problem defensively. That, I think that is going to be a big problem defensively. And it's not about switching versus man-to-man. It is about the guys specifically wearing those Bulls jerseys playing shooting guard and small forward, being bad defensive players. Okay, so the best solution, they all get really good really quickly at playing a switching style of defense. Jabari shows something closer to the level of defensive effort he showed in that Celtics-Bucks series from this most recent playoff of 2018, which people keep citing about, I'm not worried about Jabari. Did you see his defense in that Celtics series? Yeah, I saw it. That was the playoffs. Rajon Rondo looked really aggressive and good defensively when the Bulls won those first two games against Boston 2 years ago, okay? But come on, you're not going to get that from Jabari in, you know, on a Tuesday night game in December. And so that, you know, that's half of best case scenario. Jabari plays defense like he played against the Celtics and does so with solid, strict defensive rules and guidelines. And then Zach LaVine, I don't know, put a shot collar around the guy's neck so that anytime he screws up an assignment, he gets some kind of physical punishment. Because outside of that, I don't know how you fix Zach
LaVine
defensively.
Give him a little zap. That's all you need to do.
Give him a little zap. Give Zach a zap.
All right, let's get to a voicemail real quick. This one comes from John in Chicago.
What's up, guys? This is John from Chicago, fighting a little cold. Wanted to respond to a couple of things. First of all, of course the management is going to say that they want to be competitive. Nobody wants to hear them say again that we need to tank. But I 100% feel we need Zion or RJ or a top pick again. And no matter what the management says, that, you know, it's Vegas is saying 27.5 wins for a reason. There's not normally a big variation off of that, more than plus or minus 4 or 5, depending on injury. So, you know, I think we're looking at a season where we're going to get a better pick, maybe not a top three worst, but 4 through 6, I think, without, you know, much of a hassle. And I think that's the best move. Have a chance for the top, and then go from there. Fellas, I love the podcast. Listen every day. Thank you very much. Talk to you soon, boys.
Thanks for the call, John. I would like to let you know that you sound a whole hell of a lot like Nick Friedel of ESPN.
I don't think that's John. I think that was Nick just calling in to say hi, but he didn't want to blow his cover. John with a cold sounds a hell of a lot like Nick Friedel without a cold.
Yeah, seriously. But to get to his point, so obviously management's not going to say that they're tanking. Last year they didn't say that at all either. You know, they can't. Against the NBA rules, they can't come out and specifically say that. They obviously have to say that they're going to compete. But if you listen to John Paxson, you listen to Gar Foreman talk, and you understand what their process is like and ownership is going to want, do you think Jerry Reinsdorf wants to be in a rebuild longer than he has to? He's already got another rebuilding team on the south side of town, so he doesn't need a second rebuilding team. And we've talked about this a long time, like hanging out in mediocrity, and whether or not you think this hitting the reset button is going to get you back to that same point, that's up to you. But to me, I've said that before, and I said it when we saw Lauri Markkanen play at the middle of the season last year and some of the things with Zach LaVine. I said that I think this is the Bulls stepping on the accelerator as far as the rebuild goes, and that's it's even more so evident this summer when they brought Parker in for a year. They got Wendell Carter Jr. They feel good about Zach LaVine, so they signed him long term. To me, that's just saying that they're going to hit the accelerator, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's all going to come together this season.
No.
Rebuilds take more than 2 years.
Yes, they almost always do. And to John's point, there's a difference between a front office not admitting to the public and the media that, yeah, we're tanking this season like Cuban did and got slapped with a $500,000 fine. Yeah. He learned that lesson pretty quickly, and so did every other front office in the league and every ownership group across the league. You cannot talk about tanking. You can't say the word tanking because you will suffer consequences. But there is a difference between a team in the Bulls situation this past year where Paxson said, as part of this trade where we sent away our superstar, we are anticipating getting a high lottery pick just based on the evaluation of talent or lack thereof on our roster. You can get away with saying things like that. But the point here, John, is that Paxson came out after this season ended and said, we do not want to have another season like that. We want to be competitive. We will try to be competitive. So that isn't the front office. Again, like last season, they were masking the, yeah, we're tanking here. This is actually the front office, probably at the direction of the Reinsdorf, saying, no, we're done tanking. We want to be competitive next year. We believe we've assembled an exciting young core of players who will all take a big step forward next season developmentally under the tutelage of Fred Hoiberg, and we want to be competitive. So last season, they were just not saying what they were doing so they wouldn't get in trouble. This season, it's not like they're saying that we want to be competitive because they are once again hiding the tank. No, you better believe it. The front office is expecting them to be competitive this year. Not top three seed competitive, but they want to get back to the playoffs. Paxson said as much.
Can you agree with me? And I think this goes along to your point about being back in the top five lottery. Vegas obviously knows something. If they're going 27.5 wins, then they know something. You know, Vegas is usually spot on, and they win money all the time because they have insider information Vegas, and all of that.
Vegas odds makers are not in the business of losing money. People, and like, I think we actually have a voicemail coming up about somebody who is so offended by that 27.5 game over under for the Bulls win total. I think he called it blasphemous. Yeah, Vegas is usually pretty correct about those. So Bulls fans saying, oh, 40-45, our buddy out from LA earlier in the week on yesterday's mailbag, you are over projecting the win total that Vegas set by 13 wins. And Vegas is always usually pretty darn close to their over-unders. It's like, I'm sorry, do you think that you are better at projecting win totals than the people that get paid to do so professionally out there in Las Vegas? Are you out of your mind?
Last year, I think the Bulls were projected, and I would have to double-check this number, but I'm pretty sure 21 games was the over-under last year for the Bulls. And they beat that by 6 games, okay? There was a lot of other teams that were god-awful compared to what the Bulls did. And the Bulls went on a little mini-winning streak, so that helped, too. I guess I go back to this, Matt, and maybe this is going to put me in a camp where I've been convinced over the last week, week and a half, 2 weeks, with you talking about being back in the top five lottery and why you think that might be more of a realistic option than not, and then being back in the middle. I'm trying to come up with teams that right now, where we haven't seen any game, just talking about on paper, what teams would be worse than the Bulls as far as on paper goes. Probably the Suns. I don't know if everything's going to work out with them. The Suns, there's a lot of teams that I think are going to hang around where the Bulls are at. The Suns, the Grizzlies might be another team. They might be a little bit more competitive this year, getting their two stars back. But there's also teams that have a lot of question marks. The Mavericks and the Kings in the Western Conference. And then you go to the Eastern Conference. I think there's like 5 or 6 teams that we don't really know what they're going to turn into. That's why the beginning of the season, I think, is going to be really important if the Bulls do want to compete and actually prove that they can maybe make a play, have an outside shot at an 8 seed. But teams like the Pistons, the Hornets, the Knicks, the Nets, include the Bulls in this. And then I think the Magic and the Hawks are going to be behind the Bulls. I think those are probably two cornerstone teams that you can say definitively they're going to be worse than the Bulls this year. And then I would probably throw the Kings in that mix as well. So those are 3 teams. So that would put the Bulls maybe at 4th worst in the NBA on paper right now. But like I said, Pistons, Hornets, Nets, Knicks, and the Bulls. All we don't really know. There's a lot of unknowns with those teams.
Yeah. That's a toss-up. And the Bulls could be on the top end of that list of teams you just rattled off, or the bottom end. And that's what I keep going back to. Towards the back end of the season, if they're somewhere in that mix, I would rather they be on the bottom end of that list than the top end. All right, Jordan, this next one comes to us from Alec in Austin. And I think he and I are kind of along the same line of what we think is realistic when we're talking about these Bulls and their win total.
Hey, guys, this is Alec calling in from Austin, Texas. I just wanted to offer my two cents on a call that came in on Wednesday's call-in show. Basic premise was that the Bulls were capable of winning 45 games, given that they are an entirely different team. I have a couple thoughts on this. I think, no, 45 is a little too rosy. I think a lot of people forget that we went on that crazy stretch when Mirotić came back. I think we went 10-2 right after he came back. We won 15 games out of the 27 wins last year with Mirotić on the team. He's now gone. So I think 45 is a little rosy. I think 35 is probably a better ceiling for this team. And then secondly, I think it's also a little bit dishonest to portray or to suggest that this isn't a different team from last year. Again, I already mentioned the departure of Mirotić, but we added, you know, the rookie, Wendell. We added Jabari. I think a lot of Bulls fans are looking at Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine as additions as well, just given the limited amount of playing time that they saw last year. I think I'm excited about this season. Got a lot of young pieces. I do think this is a very different team. Hopefully they can stay healthy. Really enjoy the show, guys. Go Bulls.
Yeah, thanks for checking in, Alec. Again, like I said, as I queued that up, Jordan, I think he and I are in the same boat, which is to say that, yeah, the 27.5 from Vegas is probably a little low, just if you are assuming that LaVine being healthy for a full season and Dunn being healthy for a full season will help your team and not hurt them and can collectively make up for the wins that Nico Mirotić contributed to, and that's especially in that 7-game win streak, and then some. And then adding Jabari, again, helps instead of hinders this team and adds a couple of wins. Yes, in that sense, 27.5 is a little low. But 40 to 45, no, it's somewhere in the middle. And that's why, you know, I think he said in his voicemail 35 is about his ceiling for this team. And I'm right there. Like, I'm predicting 33 or 34. I would rather 33 or 34 be, you know, closer to 30 or 29 if it means that the Bulls are a few spots higher in the lottery. But I think that's the realistic middle ground that we have to face right now.
Yeah, and that's why I keep going back. 30-35 wins, I think, is a realistic expectation for this Bulls team this year. On paper, this team looks good. This team looks fun. This team looks exciting. I get that. But at the same time, you got to be realistic. Is once they go out on the court there, they're all going to have to figure this out. They're going to have to gel together. And how long does that actually take? You're not going to see it on opening night where all of a sudden these guys are in mid-season form and they figured everything out. There's going to be some struggles. I know Bulls fans don't want to hear that, but there's going to be struggles. It happens with every young team out there. And the Bulls are a very young team. Outside of a few guys who you consider your quote-unquote veterans, this team's very, very, very young. And so it's going to come down to Fred Hoiberg, how he's able to maintain, to switch guys out, how to find the most effective rotations. And then it's on the players, too. How many guys are actually going to buy into playing defense and have that translate to the offensive side of the ball? Are guys going to get frustrated with not getting touches? Like, there's all these little things that you have to worry about, too, as far as a team gelling. I think once we see a substantial amount of games, like I'm talking about the first 25% of the games played this season, maybe 20, 25 games in, you're going to get a real sample size to understand like where this team is and where they could potentially go to. But I think our realistic expectations for 30 to 35 wins account for some of that stuff that's going to happen this season, the struggles, the quote unquote figuring it out. And that's what's going to take. And I'm hoping they figure it out sooner rather than later. But you've got to account for some things like that, too.
Yeah, I think some of the teams that were tanking this past season are not. I mean, Dallas and Memphis are two simple examples right there. That Memphis is going to get a couple of veteran healthy pieces back and add in a very interesting young prospect in Jaren Jackson. Dallas now have Doncic in the fold. And Dennis Smith Jr. and all the pieces that they have. Like, it's just a matter of counting the teams in the league and counting the bad teams that will be fighting for those lottery balls and RJ and Zion and that crew of top tier one guys. And I think that the Bulls are, if you know, worst case scenario from the front office's perspective, and you know goes back to that word you were talking about, gel. If everything doesn't gel with Jabari and a healthy LaVine and Dunn and Markkanen trying to share touches and share usage, it's feasible that this is just a low 30s win team, and there are fewer bad teams to go around this year.
All right, final voicemail of the day. This one comes from the 630.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to call in because I'm backing up that guy who called in from L.A. who thought the Bulls could win 40 games at least. I want to really go at this take because I was downright pissed when Vegas blasphemously and ignorantly said the Bulls would win 27.5 or 28.5 wins, whatever it was. Yeah, maybe there will be some gelling hurdles in the beginning. But how the hell can we say 40 is egregious? Last year, the quote-unquote Big Three only played 12 games last year together. Dunn was in his first year in a prominent role, LaVine coming off his ACL mid-year, and Lowry legit being a rookie, obviously. At first two-round picks, one of the legit rim protectors to our team that was, what, close to last in blocks? And another wing who can probably do more at this point in his career already than Holiday, who's just a chucker in Hutch. I don't know what the bench rotation will be aside from Bobby, but the sooner we start Wendell, the more games we will win. LaVine is only 23 still, and we saw the jump Oladipo made at 25. So let's give the man a break when it comes to defense. At least he knows what he has to do to improve on. With him, it's always been on the mental side more anyways. Finally, yeah, Jabari isn't the best fit at three, but if he keeps his weight down, he'll be fine guarding most threes. It's not like he's going against LeBron and Paul George every night. After all, there are a lot of guys who are three and Ds if they aren't the elite guys, so staying in front of them shouldn't be an issue. He's just got to make sure he doesn't leave them open. Thank you. I hope you guys enjoy this take. 40 wins. Have a good one.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it as always. Once again, you can hit us up 331-979-1369. The one thing I want to touch on real quick, Matt, and you can go back and forth about some of the things that he listed in his defense of 40 wins, is this Oladipo comp. For one, let me just tell you from personal experience, Oladipo was a phenomenal defender in college. A phenomenal defender. He has athleticism that can jump out the gym. And I get that's the comparison with him and LaVine. Sure, that's great. Oladipo learned how to be a great offensive player and get his body right in that same sense. And yes, he went off with the Pacers. But you look at the fit in the first couple of years that he had in Orlando and then with the Thunder and then going to the Pacers. The one thing that I think is always attributed to Oladipo's work ethic is the way he watched Russell Westbrook with the Thunder. And you can go back, there's a bunch of interviews that cite that same thing. He brought that mentality to the Pacers. Look, it's harder to teach a guy how to be a great defender in the NBA than it is how to be an offensive player in this league. That's just the way it goes. So for Oladipo kind of had to step up on LaVine because Oladipo was such a great defender at IU, in college. And he had a couple of years of growing pains, sure, but now you're seeing him start to light it up at 25. But that's because he's also a great defender, and he learned how to figure out how to be a good offensive player. So to me, the Oladipo to LaVine comp is a little unfair, and Oladipo had a phenomenal year last year. But the comp is a little bit difficult for me to understand there just because it's more difficult to teach guys how to be great defenders than it is how to teach guys to be great offensive players in this league.
Yeah, and you know, that's. I'm glad that you touched on that comp because clearly, you know, you have the expertise on Oladipo, and so I think that comp is a little silly. And the other thing that I want to point out about his email or his voicemail, and he left a lot of different points here, is that he thinks that starting Wendell is all of a sudden going to lead to a lot more wins. I love that optimism about Wendell Carter Jr., and it seems like most Bulls fans at this point, even those who didn't like the pick initially on draft night, are starting to come around on that because we're all starting to see how special this kid can be. But he's not starting. He's not starting to begin the season. At some point, the hope is that the Bulls shop Rolo, but we're not convinced that they can find any trade for him because he's a traditional mediocre center that is at an all-time low as far as trade value across the league. market value basically zero, but he is a valued veteran on this team and a leader on this team, and they are probably going to start him. And it's not like all of a sudden they're going to give Wendell bench minutes in the first month and a half or so of the season, and then December 1st say, wow, all right, Wendell, you're the starter now. I know that that's what we all want to happen, but I'm not convinced that that is what is going to happen. I don't know about you, Jordan.
Yeah, I've already said it before. I think if Robin Lopez is on this roster, he's going to start. And I don't think that's necessarily the problem that I would have. Okay, if Robin Lopez starts, who do you think closes out games if Wendell Carter Jr. is good? Is Wendell Carter Jr. in the game to close out with Lowry, with Jabari, with Zach LaVine, and with Chris Dunn? That, to me, is more important than who's getting the starter role. It's like, who's finishing out these games? Is Robin Lopez going to be in there, or is it going to be Wendell Carter Jr.? And he brought up a point about the second unit, too. I'll tell you right now what the second unit's going to look like. To start the season, unless we see something ridiculous happen in training camp, it's going to be Cameron Payne at point guard. It's going to probably be Denzel Valentine at the two. Maybe Justin Holiday at the three.
Or vice versa there.
Yeah, those are interchangeable. You're going to have Bobby at the four and probably Wendell at the five. That's what your group is going to look like. I would be shocked if Chandler Hutchinson...
With an option on Hutchinson overtaking Justin Holiday and or Denzel Valentine.
I think I would be shocked if, to start the season, Chandler Hutchinson was a main core piece of that rotation. I would be shocked at that. Maybe the Bulls are coming to their senses and they're like, you know what? I know we have Justin Holiday here. He's a veteran, but we don't need to play him. And that would be the smart decision, is not to play Justin Holiday.
You and I have agreed that Holiday should be playing less than 0 minutes this season because it's just a waste of time. It's a waste of time, and it's a wasted opportunity to get minutes to Chandler Hutchinson. Whether or not the Bulls actually believe that Denzel is a piece of this rebuild, which they have said at times, and a strong bench piece. You know, they cite the young core and then they cite Bobby and Denzel as their strong bench pieces. You can believe that or not believe that. We've had fun at Denzel's expense on this show and have also given him credit when it's due. But Chandler Hutchinson is bigger than Denzel, has a significantly longer wingspan than Denzel. When you're talking about that, going back to that length argument we were having earlier, Jordan, like Hutchinson in that sense is a guy who I would like to see leapfrog Denzel, as a guy who can be useful as a two-way player at that ever-important wing spot. I don't know if it's going to happen, but either way, he's not going to get the chance to prove that if Justin Holiday is getting minutes ahead of him.
I agree with you there. I'm 100% in on that. And four-year player, too, he might not need as much polishing. While his ceiling's not as high as guys that go in the lottery, guys that are 19, 20 years old, ceiling might not be higher, but the polishing and the readiness might not necessarily there might not be as big of a learning curve for Chandler Hutchinson coming into the NBA than maybe some of these other top guys that might struggle a little bit.
Quick poll here. Do you believe that Hutchinson's ceiling is higher than Denzel Valentine's right now? Because I think I would say yes.
To be fair to Denzel Valentine, I'm going to say no right now.
All right.
Denzel Valentine was, like I've told you a million times, there's only, 34 guys in the NBA that shot at the clip that he did from three last year. And a lot of those guys are starting main pieces, and the top 15, 20 guys are stars in this league. So I got to give Denzel Valentine a little bit of credit. I feel like that guy gets shit on so much in this city, and we'll find out. This year, we'll really find out if he can repeat that same performance as last year.
I think you and Fred just became best friends. not Hoiberg. You know the Fred I'm talking about.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can drop us a voicemail, a text message. We want to hear from you, 331-979-1369. Or you can tweet at us at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We have a very special guest. Some of you are going to enjoy our episode coming out tomorrow, so make sure to stay tuned for that. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.